Let's say we're going to be talking about something a little different. We don't often look at the writing part of travel writing so much. And there's a big reason for that. It's because if you can't pitch, if you can't get that assignment, you're better off not practicing your writing. You're better off not writing in a vacuum to your own specifications of what a story is without having an editor, without having the framework of a magazine article to work within, because you're going to pattern the type of writing that's not publishable. So that's why we talk so much about pitching and how to write pitches and how to analyze magazines and how to come up with good ideas, because if you don't do that first, if you don't start with the idea, then you end up with writing that doesn't have a home, writing that's not publishable, and also writing that is hard for people to read or follow. So this week we're going to talk about what types of articles you should be writing. And if you got either the email newsletter or read the blog post connected with the call today, you'll see that we talked a little bit about this first point here already in those two things. We talked about why it's important to start brainstorming your article ideas with the shape, the section, the format of the article in mind. And that is why we're going to look at all these formats today. So I'm going to a little bit talk about what we talked about in the blog post, but I'll also say a couple new things on that. And then I'm going to go through the main types of articles that you're going to come across. And this is in travel and travel-related magazines specifically. There's some other types of features and short articles and different things like that that aren't very prevalent in travel that you might have become familiar with if you have a journalism background or went to journalism school. And then we're going to look at specific examples from that EasyJet magazine for each of these article types. And we're going to go backwards. We're going to look at the article and we're going to talk about how you would pitch this and then why you would pitch it that way for the specific article type. So that's what we're going to look at this week. Starting with the shape, the format, the section of the magazine, before you formulate any more of your pitch idea, so to speak, is really fundamental. It's because that's one of the biggest problems that I see with most pitches that I get. And it sucks. I was just looking at one this week where, it was there, forget anything else that's going on with the pitch, but I look at it and when I have my editor hat on and I look at these pitches, my immediate thought is, can I use this? That's what an editor is thinking. Can I use this? Then, do I trust this writer to write it? But first, it's, can I even use this idea? Is this even valid? And often, editors get pitches where they simply can't use it, and it's for a very clear reason. So I wanted to share this quote from Julia Cosgrove with you. She's, I think, now the executive editor of Afar. She's been there for quite a while. At least since the 2009 or something, and she's changed roles a couple times. But she's kind of the head honcho, and in an interview, this is pulled from Media Bistro actually, she named one of the really common things that editors complain about, which is that they get a pitch that is about a place rather than a story. So she says, I'm going to Peru. Would you like an article about my time there? That's a message that gets a swift and immediate delete. But she continues to say it needs to be a story, not a topic or an idea. And what we looked at in the blog post and the newsletter today was, what does that mean? Like, when an editor says that you need to have an angle or a story, like, what does that mean? What are they actually asking you for? Like, story, okay. I went to this place and I did this. Isn't that a story? What they really mean is that they want to know what the point is. They want to know why their readers care. That's what they mean by story. But the problem is that I get from a lot of you, and I'm sure we're going to hear this weekend in the Pitchapalooza that I'm up at the retreat house right now setting up for, is that what about these pieces that are like a front of book piece or an interview or a roundup? Like, does a roundup have a point? Does a roundup have a story? And so that's why I find this advice that editors give, I understand from their standpoint, but it totally doesn't make sense to writers. So what Julia goes on to say is really important, and I want to share this with you. She says, we have a very specific take on travel. So really do your homework as a writer and familiarize yourself with what makes us different. And I'm going to get back to the end of her quote in a second, but One of the things that I think a lot of writers miss when looking at magazines is this concept of, oh, well, this looks like something that they did in the past, or I think this is something that they would cover. And for instance, Afar has a very specific take on travel, as Julia said, which is that they cover very authentic, experiential travel. It's become more high-end than it used to be, but essentially authentic experiential travel, right? And so a lot of times you'll do something and you'll think demographically, like for the type of person who reads Afar, you read Afar, you are that type of person, this is the kind of thing that those readers are interested in. But the issue is that what makes a magazine different isn't just that. And as writers who haven't been magazine editors and been on that side of the desk, this is really easy to forget that for the magazine, for their publisher, for the ads, for the staff, what makes the magazine different, a lot of it is the way they present the information, the visuals, the formats, the length. For instance, the magazine that we're going to look at today is very infographic-y. A lot of their articles have a minimal amount of text, but like it's sliced up in these different ways. There's boxes here, there's photos there, there's maps here. It's a very long magazine. That's why I was saying if you've joined us late, the magazine is in the handout section. It is the, let me double check the issue, it is the May 2017 issue of EasyJet Traveler. This is a long magazine. This is 168 pages, in part because they make it so visual, but that's part of their style. They are going after a young audience. They're going after an audience that's probably also using their phones or other devices on the flight. And so they are competing for that attention, and they know that to do it, they have to be incredibly hip and entertaining. And so as a reader, you'll think, oh, EasyJet magazine, like this is for people who fly EasyJet. EasyJet goes to these destinations. Like, so I went to this destination. This might be the kind of thing that would fit an EasyJet traveler. But to those editors, it's not just the content, and it's not even just the tone, it's the format. It's, is this something that I can make visually interesting? Is this too much text? Is this something that's first person? Because I tend to write things that are in second person. Here's how you do this. Besides even third person, which is descriptive. So these things about the format really have a lot to do with familiarizing yourself with what makes the magazine different, as Julia says here. And what she continues to say is, we get a lot of pitches that would fit better in other magazines. And I see this all the time. I was just on a coaching call yesterday where I wasn't looking at full pitches, but the individual had sent me a big list of ideas I had requested matched to magazines that she wanted to break into. So she had done it. She had put together 20 ideas matched to magazine sections for 20 different magazines. I was so impressed with how much work she had done. And the thing is that some of them I had no comments about whatsoever, which is very rare, any of you who know me, for me to have no comments on a pitch idea. And so that was great. But some of them, I looked at them and they just weren't, I could see how she could say, oh, this is what the magazine section looks like, but it just wasn't a fit for that magazine. And that's the kind of thing that you need to get a better sense of. If you're struggling with your pitches, if you're not getting as many assignments as you'd like, or if you're just not getting assignments from the magazine caliber or the website caliber you want to be writing for. It's all about familiarizing yourself. And that means looking past the content and looking more at the format. So let's get into that. So there are a couple different types of articles that I want to look at. And what you'll find is that I say a couple because some of them are variations of the same kind of thing. And I'm going to look at them. I'm going to show you how they're different. But so the news brief that I have here, there's a reason that I have the news brief, but then I don't have anything else that's brief, that's short. And that's because a lot of these formats can work in different lengths. They can be 200 words, they can be 2,000 words. They really can vary, with a couple exceptions here. And those two are the narrative feature and the postcard, which are sort of two sides of the same coin that only different in length. So let's look at these in sections. So news brief, this is really something that the story, the what's going on, the why, is just that it's new. So this is really important to remember because I have people tell me articles that they want to pitch to a magazine's front of book section where they're covering things that are new, and the things that they want to cover have been open for a while. And when I say a while, I mean 6 months, a year, 7 months, something. So this is not a news brief anymore. So anytime something is not opening in 6 months, as in when the magazine is coming out that you might have your article appear in, it's not going to be new enough. If it's open now, by then it'll be open for a while and it's old. So anytime you're doing a news brief, it's really important to keep that in mind, that the news part is paramount. That's why that item exists. So if the news part isn't paramount, what else can you do? If it's, you know, a restaurant, a shop, there's so many other things that you can do with that. The article can't be, however, just that this thing exists because it's not new anymore. So then you move into this second section here, which is interview, business profile, and person profile. And so the reason that I think of those as the next step from the news brief is that these are what you do with an individual place that you want to cover that is not new enough to be a news brief. So if you have visited a museum, a store, a restaurant, an artisan, you know, a fashion designer, and anything that you think is really great and deserves its own little something, but it's not necessarily a feature, you want to write just about that thing, almost in like an encyclopedic capacity, just about, you know, how it started, why it's there, what they do. Then we're moving into this section. Now we're into profiles. And profiles essentially take two tracks. So an interview, in a way, is a profile, right? But you're using the exact questions and words, though they've been edited, of course, that you exchanged with that individual, whether it, you're actually profiling a business or their business or that person. So they're kind of two sides of the same coin. Whereas when you're doing the profile, that's you writing in third person and incorporating quotes, but there's a lot more molding of the storyline going on, and there's also a lot more external research as well as details. One of the big things that I find that kind of sets interviews apart, and this is really important to remember as you're choosing interview subjects, is that interviews just have to stand on their own. They have perhaps a tiny, you know, maybe 50-word introduction, but besides that, the words that this person is saying need to be interesting enough, that article is interesting enough for the editor to publish, for the editor to assign you to do. And so this can be tough because, you know, we see a lot of celebrity interviews, right? And it seems like they don't really have anything in particular to say. And the reason that they work is that people are just curious. They want to know what the celebrity thinks about things. So if you're proposing an interview and it's not with a celebrity, why do people care? The person probably needs to have some sort of expertise. And so this can work, you know, if they're an expert in a subject area, but that subject area can also be a destination. So you can do an interview, for instance, with a chef who lives in a certain city about their favorite things in that city, because people care, because they want to know what to eat there and they want to know what's new in the city, but you're giving that extra layer that they're hearing it from an expert. They're not just hearing it from you. And so you ask a couple questions that establish the background of that expert, and then you move into their recommendations. But this is really important because this is a big differentiator between pitching interviews and business profiles. And in fact, there's probably many, many fewer interview sections out there for this reason, because they're a bit harder to make interesting. Whereas when you're doing a profile, you as the writer can have an interview where you can tell that the business is interesting, but the person isn't necessarily saying the most interesting things, or they're not very quotable, and you can still write a really great article about it because you can talk to a couple different people, you can visit the venue yourself, and you can dig up a lot more details that are illustrative and interesting about that person or that business. So then the next step up from there, so to say, is a roundup. And I like to think of a roundup as essentially where we take a number of news briefs or a number of business or individual profiles, more so business profiles, and put them all together. So there's a couple different flavors of that. One is where they are all similar, as in each item that you've included in the roundup, and roundup is a noun for the verb. It's a noun that means you've rounded up a bunch of things and put them together, and now you have a roundup. So in the roundup, which is similar, which we refer to as a basket of kittens, you have a bunch of things that have something in common, but that are also different. So for the person who's interested in the common theme, there's a wide variety of interesting options. For the person who doesn't particularly care about the common theme, but maybe they care about a certain part of the world, or a certain type of music, or a certain type of food, they can also find something through the differences between the different items in your basket. A destination guide, on the other hand, is going to take a lot of different types of things, and the only relation is that they're all in this destination. So it's going to be a mix of attractions and hotels and restaurants and, you know, places to walk or festivals or other annual events. So a destination guide has the only commonality between these different things is typically the city. Otherwise, they're quite diverse. Then we get into, so like I said, the roundup is essentially taking a bunch of news briefs or a bunch of profiles. So then the next step from there is that you're not only describing things. So you're not presenting the encyclopedic view, so to say, of something, but rather you are giving the editor this coveted quote-unquote story. And so what does that mean? So when you are giving an editor a story, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And part of why it has a beginning, middle, and an end is not chronological, but it's because something happened in the middle that makes the end different than the beginning. So I'm going to say that again. A story, for the purposes of narrative journalism, is when there is a beginning, middle, and end, but something in the middle has made the end different than the beginning. This is very important. And this is the reason why the types of first-person narrated blog posts that a lot of people write and that are often derided by journalists don't fly as narrative features, because it's not clear, slash there just isn't any change between the beginning and the end. There's no alteration in the person that they discuss or their perception of the place or of the place itself. So this is really important, because I mentioned earlier how, except for the news brief, everything in here can be different lengths. So what this means is that a lot of features aren't narrative features, and that's completely fine. A lot of features are business profiles or person profiles or perhaps interviews or perhaps roundups. So a narrative feature isn't the only kind of feature out there. And this is really important to remember if you feel like you are the kind of person who looks through the magazine database and sees these features and thinks you should be pitching them, but you don't feel confident about it. It probably means that narrative features aren't for you at this moment. And believe me, you'll work up to them, because I used to feel like that myself. And so what that means is that the features that are better for you are features that are roundups or features that are profiles. So this is really important to check back on what Julia Cosgrove said, right? She said, don't give me a topic, give me a story. So if a narrative feature is a feature that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and something has changed, what happens if you want to take a profile and turn that into a feature? You need to add a little bit more of that story element. You need to think a little bit more of that story element, but it's not that your whole feature is going to become a story. You might be writing about a business as your profile, and the story, so to say, the beginning, middle, and end, is that first there was a person who had an idea, and now it's a business. And in the middle, some things happened, and that's what you're going to talk about. But the change is that first there was a person, and now that person has a business. So the change doesn't have to always be some glorious thing, like you went to work in a refugee camp for Syrian refugees on an island in Greece that's next to Turkey for 8 weeks and had an epiphany about life. That's not always what a feature is. A feature can be a profile, but it is important that you consider what's the change between the beginning and the end once your pieces get longer. When your pieces are shorter, you can still do something a little bit more encyclopedic as long as you keep in mind what's the point. Why does the editor care? Why do their readers care? So even though right now we're talking about article formats, I just want to keep in mind that you can't just write an actual encyclopedia article. You can't just write like the about page of a company as a business profile. There still needs to be some sort of sense of movement or narration, but not to the extent that you are using in a narrative feature, where you're introducing different characters that you've met in the destination, or different characters who are guiding you through the destination, and that you as the narrator, as the protagonist, have experienced an internal change or a shift in what you think about the destination. So that's more of the narrative feature. But if you take a profile and you turn it into a feature, you still need to have that same beginning, middle, and end element. So anytime you're looking at pitching a longer piece, even if it's not technically a narrative feature, keep that in mind. So how does that extend if you have a roundup that's become a feature? This is a really interesting point to consider. If you're doing a roundup, which is long, then what makes that beginning, middle, and end might be the things that you choose to show. It might be something that, you know, you explain basically briefly in the preface, in that short 100 or 200 word thing at the beginning of your roundup before you get into it. But you still need to establish why you are talking about this place by showing that it's interesting, and that's typically done with this beginning, middle, and end. So when we look at the destination guide later, the one that I've chosen to show you is a couple different pages long, and you can pull it up as well in the background in the PDF. But the idea is that they're showing a destination that you may have thought of in one light, and they're showing you how to explore it in a different light. So the beginning, middle, and end in this case is that you as the reader had a certain perception about this place, and then as the roundup is showing you different opportunities, different things to do in that place to explore it more deeply, then your perception as the reader changes. So what makes the longer roundups different than the narrative features or than the business profile is who the subject is. So if we have a long business profile, the thing or the subject that has changed is the business or the person who started the business. If you have a long roundup, the thing or the person that's changing is the reader. It's their perception. And if you have a long narrative feature, what's typically changing is you, the first person protagonist. Or if there's a different protagonist, then it's probably a person profile. So I know that's probably kind of a lot in terms of story and everything, but I wanted to make sure that I get that out there, because as we start to look at the examples in a little bit, I know that all the things I just mentioned are some of the things that trip people up. So I wanted to put that out there so that as we get to questions, you understand how the accordion of changing the lengths on profiles versus roundups versus narratives works out. And so what that takes us to is the postcard. So the postcard is essentially the mini version of the narrative feature. And what that means is it's like even past a short story, right? Like a short story is typically, you know, some pages. It's actually longer than a narrative feature. The postcard is like if you took a short story and you stuffed it into 300 or 400 words. The postcard is like a snapshot more than it is a postcard. It's like a moment from a trip, a visual almost, that's meant to show you so many other things. So a postcard is a super difficult thing to write when you're just starting out, and they can be very lovely to perfect. But I don't necessarily recommend that you go after them unless you have other writing training, because it's all about doing a lot, really a lot, in terms of setting a scene, projecting a message, giving a sense of place in a very tiny amount of space. But we're going to look at one nonetheless and give you some examples. Now, the last two that I have on here are different both from the rest and also from each other, but I've kind of put them together for this reason, that both of them are lesson-oriented. So they're not necessarily meant to convey information as much as they're meant to teach something. And so the personal essay, or just essay, is meant to teach through example. It's going to be, just so you know, if you want to write essays, you need to write them in advance. You can pitch them, but they'll always be assigned on speculation, because essays are the kind of thing where the editor needs to see the finished piece to know if it works for them or not. Essays are all about the actual text, not the idea, and here's why. Because an essay inherently is an exploration. So what an essay does, a good essay, is that it starts with a question, and then it just keeps asking more questions and more questions and more questions about that question, and hopefully eventually arrives somewhere, which might be nowhere in theory, but the idea, the mindset of the author has changed by asking these questions. Again, like a postcard, not necessarily something that you want to dive into if you don't have a writing background, but because you have to submit them on speculation anyway, they can be nice to play with on their own for a little while. Much, much easier to do, and a much better way to grasp this sort of sense of teaching, I think, in writing is the service or how-to piece. Now, I'm sure you guys have all seen 700,000 service or how-to pieces on BuzzFeed or on, you know, the cover of women's magazines or things like that. It's how to this. You know, of course, the typical example is, you know, how to have like 8 different ways to have a better orgasm on the cover of Cosmopolitan magazine or something like that, right? So we're all familiar with what a service or how-to piece looks like. But here's the interesting thing. In journalism generally, not even in the just in the internet age, but also in the pre-internet age, a how-to piece is quite different than what you might just think, oh, of course, I can sit down and just write that. So a how-to piece in journalism, and particularly in travel journalism, and particularly today, has to be super backed up by experts. It is not your 5 best ways to enjoy Athens. It is the 5 best ways to enjoy Athens. And each one has quotes from 3 different local people who are experts to support why that is the best way. So if you're interested in writing travel service pieces, this is very important to remember, is that you should never pitch an editor a service piece that you're just going to write in a vacuum without getting additional quotes. Forget about just research, but additional quotes, because otherwise that's something they can very easily do themselves in-house in like 15 minutes. So just don't pitch it unless it's going to be a reported service piece. So I'm just putting that out there. And now I'm going to go through. I've pulled out examples of every single one of these, and I'm going to walk through them all one by one. As I'm telling you all these things, and part of the reason that I chose this particular magazine is that EasyJet, as I mentioned earlier, is extremely long. It's a 168-page book, the one that we're looking at right now. And part of what makes it so long is it's front of book. I think that the front of book, the sort of short, uncategorized, so to say, pieces that come before the feature, I think there's about 80 pages of them or something. It's a very, very long front of book. And I remember when we were putting it in the travel magazine database, I said to the writer, there's got to be some recurring sections in that enormous front of book, right? I mean, they have like 25 different articles there. And she said, I checked a bunch of different issues, and they're really different every time. And I just thought that was crazy. How can like these editors have 25 articles that they just do from scratch every single month? Like, this is a 12 month a year publication. How can they do all of this without any sort of rubrics, any recurring columns, any anything? As an editor, I would kill myself. That sounds horrible. They must have really a lot of people working on this. And they don't, is the funny thing. And so they work with quite a lot of freelancers. They also write some of them in-house. Like I said, a lot of them are very visual. But part of the thing is that they can take anything. They can take an interesting art exhibit they heard coming up. You know, they can take a random idea on what's new in travel and pull together a basket of kittens around it. They can do anything there, which in a way can make it easier for them to put together because they're not stuck, they're not entrenched in different section formats that have to be there every month. So, well, on the one hand, it makes it a bit harder for the editor, and on the one hand, it makes it a bit easier for the editor. What it definitely does is open up so many possibilities for you as the writer. I have a lot of people come to me and say that they want to pitch features, like all the time. They want to pitch features. And I looked at the pitch, and then I'm like, an editor is going to look at this and say, this is 200 words. Like, where's the story? There's nothing else here. It's just a profile, and it doesn't even need to be that long. So this would go in the front of book, if anywhere. And that's the thing, is that a lot of these places that you've gone, things that you've seen, that you're not quite sure what to do with, they probably do belong in a front of book somewhere, but it can be hard to know where. But the beauty of front of book sections, like the one that we're going to dive into, is that they're often quite a bit amorphous. When I do the Pitchapalooza that we have going on this weekend, the live Pitchapalooza, I sit here with our enormous collection of magazines, and as we do the lessons, we all grab a magazine, and we flip through, and we identify what's in the front of the book, what's by freelancers, how is it different. And what typically happens is that they're all amorphous, especially airline magazines. But that's kind of the point, is it's a grab bag of things. And so you can very easily take a story idea that you've been sitting on or that you've been having trouble placing and find a home for it in a front of book because they are a catch-all. But the way to do it is not to tell them you're going to Peru, like Julia Cosgrove said, or that you've been to Peru. It's to tell them that you went to Peru, and while G Adventures has been partnering with these, you know, textile makers near Machu Picchu for years, and they've done very well, there's a new homegrown startup, which is actually not near the tourist area. It's in all these other areas that has banded together to get their items distributed in the airport to get themselves exposed to visitors, and here's how they did it. So you have to approach them with a very specific idea, but also with the format. So this is very clearly a business profile, right? And it's got a story, which is that one group was having success, they weren't because they weren't part of this partnership, and then you're going to tell how they managed to become successful and get their stuff in the airport. So the front of book is like a secret stash of all sorts of interesting articles that editors have figured out what to do with. And part of the way to get more of your stories published is to help the editor see how your story fits there. So that's why we're going to talk about these formats. So I'm going to see if I can just show you quickly on the side. So if you have not already, then open up the magazine now. I hope we've switched. Okay, so you should be seeing the magazine now. So like I said, this is going to be the, I believe it's the May 2017 issue, and it's a very, very long magazine. This PDF actually has 100 pages, and so it just keeps jumping around. So if you start just on page one of the magazine and scroll past all the ads, of which there are many because the magazine is very successful, and the editor's letter and the contributors and the masthead, then you're going to get to the manual. This is what they call their front of book section. And as you can tell, it's got a lot of stuff going on. And it's organized by numbers. So as I pull things up on the slides, then you can follow them in the numbers here in the magazine, because I've had to take them a bit out of order from how they are in the magazines to keep them in the order of the sections as we discuss them. So I'm going to flip back over to the slides now. But that's how, if you have the magazine pulled up, you can follow what we're doing, except of course the first one that I've chosen doesn't have the number on it, but this is one of the very first ones in the magazine. So if you flip through one of the very first articles that you're going to see, it has a really beautiful picture in the background that I've cut off just so we can see the text, but it is very clearly a news brief. It is about an exhibit, an art installation actually, that only goes for 8 weeks. And you know how I know it's a news brief? Because at the end it says until the 11th of June. This is a really, really clear indicator that something is new, is that there is a specific date. So anytime you're looking through a magazine trying to see if they do have news briefs, look for a specific date, because nothing else in a magazine is going to have a date on it, because editors don't want their publications to be dated. They want them to be things that people can continue to use. So a couple things you'll notice here. This is quite short. Just looking at it, I would say it's maybe 150 pages. And the thing is that these are the types of articles that are hard for editors to get, because people who have been writing them for a while are not super keen to use that already in that they have with an editor to just get $150 if it's a dollar a word, or $50 or whatever that pay is. They would rather use the connection that they have with the editor to get longer, juicier stories. So what that means is that universally, somebody even told me, she's not with Travel Nature anymore, but that when she was there, Amy Farley edited the front of book, and she was like always desperate for front of book pieces. Don't harp in on the word desperate. This is just something that I heard from somebody. But my point is that even the very large magazines have a need for these things. Now, the difficult thing then becomes, how do you pitch them? How do you pitch something that's going to be going at the time that the magazine is published in advance and get it, you know, picked up, assigned, written, edited, photographed, and into the publication just at the moment that it's going to come out. This is hard, right? So a lot of the press releases that you would be able to get your hands on, the editors can also get their hands on. So the best way to do this is to be always asking people, what is coming next? Do you have something new coming soon? Like, oh, I noticed that this thing is vacant. Do you know if there's something else going in there? Or like, is that going to be a hotel? Or if you're at a museum, well, what exhibits do you have coming up a year from now? So the best way to find these news things that editors don't know about and won't know about is to just constantly be asking questions when you're on the ground about the future and to take notes on those and to pitch them very, very specifically in terms of the lead time. So the lead time with different parts of the magazine is different. The lead time with different magazines is different. This is something that we've talked a lot about before in a couple different webinars, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. But the lead time is the number of months in advance of when the article will appear in print that you need to be sending your pitch to the editor. And the thing is with the front of book that the lead time tends to be less. And that's for a couple different reasons. So features can be assigned like 2 years out, even for small magazines, a year out for features, and sometimes even departments is not uncommon. But front of book things tend to be, even in very large magazines, say 6 months out or something, because they're trying to follow trends. They don't want to have those things be too far removed from when they're going to go to print because they want to make sure that they're relevant, and that's hard to do. So if you have something that has a specific time peg, like you know a really great installation is going to be going, you can pitch it early. You can pitch it as soon as you know. And the worst thing the editor is going to say is, well, I'm not assigning that yet, but I'm going to be assigning it, you know, in this month. Please contact me again then. Great. Now you're already on the editor's radar. So as soon as you have, you know, done your digging and asked around about what's new and isolated something that is interesting enough for the editor to care, for people to potentially travel there, go ahead and pitch it. Like I said, the worst thing that's going to happen is the editor will give you a very specific timeline of when they will be assigning that issue. So that's news briefs and how to pitch them. So let's move on. Interviews. So I talked quite a bit when we were on the types of article slide about interviews and their various drawbacks and why you see fewer of them than profiles. But in large magazines, I think for the most part, you're still going to find at least one because people like them. So typically, like I said, they're going to be with somebody who's famous. But the thing is that famous is relative. I have quite a lot of friends who in their circles are like rock stars, but you guys would never have heard of them. You know, I have a friend who has had, I think, 5 New York Times bestselling books. And on his last book tour, Warren Buffett was like a guest on stage with him at one of his book tour stops. But like most of you wouldn't have heard of him. So this is really important to keep in mind, is that famous is relative. Famous does not mean a household name movie star. For some magazines it might, but not for all of them. So in Pitchapalooza, we had somebody who was working on an interview pitch around this guy who is a Canadian comedian and actually quite renowned there, and she was pitching it to a Canadian magazine, and she was really amazed that they hadn't done a profile on him yet. So that is just the right amount of fame for that publication. So this is the thing, is that's all you need. You need famous enough for the setting. So if it's an airline magazine, you can pitch people who are famous in the destinations they fly to, but that most of the readers might not know. But that's exactly the kind of thing that an airline magazine would be looking for. So the most important thing when pitching interviews is that you have access. Don't pitch, I hope this is obvious, but don't pitch an interview without getting permission to do the interview, because this is a huge red flag for editors, and that's always the very first thing that they will ask you. So never ever pitch an interview without getting permission first. How do you do that? We've talked about this in a couple of past webinars, but it really comes down to, if you want to interview somebody but you don't have the assignment yet, you ask them if they would be included if the article is accepted. This gets harder with bigger famous people if you don't have a very personal connection, and that's why it's good to choose famous enough people. So when you pitch an interview, it typically is pretty standard in terms of the length according to the space in that magazine that they typically allot for it, and the editor will get back to you about what that length is. And you can always get back to them and say, you know, in the past, how long have people done the interview for to get the type of text that you're looking for. And always make sure also when you do interview assignments to check in advance before your interview what the recording requirements are, because some publications will automatically expect that for an interview you will not only furnish them with the recording of the webinar, or sorry, of the interview so that they can double check the quotes, but also a transcript of it. So make sure that you check that with them when you get the assignment, is what they will need for fact checking your interview. So like I said, related to interviews are the business profile and the person profile. And let's see if I can zoom this in and have you all see the Zoom as well. So this is a screenshot that I took from the feature, which is actually a roundup in the magazine that you guys have, which is like 50 Reasons to Visit England Now. And this is a profile about a pub. And it's really interesting because as I was breaking down this magazine into things to use in the class today, I realized its headlines kind of suck. Like its headlines, internal headlines for things within roundups and stuff like that. Like this headline you would never see in like a on the front page of a print magazine. It's somewhat lame, but they get away with it because airline magazines are designed for sort of captive readers, as they call it, people who are sitting on the flight and don't really have a ton of choice if they don't have a device with them besides read this magazine. So when I first kind of glanced over this, as I was like, the English pub is still kicking, this must be a trend piece, which we didn't talk about because trend pieces tend to actually fall into these other categories that we're looking at in terms of being roundups or being business profiles. And so this is a really good example of something that is at once a profile of a specific business while talking to a greater trend. And that greater trend is the why. That was the hook, the why do they care, why do the readers care, why is the editor interested, that the writer who pitched this story would have used to get the assignment to write about this specific pub. So in this case, they're talking about how there's been, obviously pubs are a huge part of English culture and English traditions, but that there are kind of chain pubs, and you know that it can be hard for small business owners to stay in business as rents rise and different things like that. And they're using that trend, that beginning, to talk about how this pub has pioneered a completely different model to become successful and remain alive, and that's the end. So this is, like I said, how you can take something, I'd say this is about 250 words, and still have a beginning, middle, and an end, and also have a why, which, like I said, in this case is speaking to a larger trend, in a tiny, tiny number of words. And I had somebody ask me yesterday about writing their pitches too long, and it's really important anytime you're pitching something that's short that your pitch should not exceed the number of words that your final piece would be. So like I said, just eyeballing this, I think it's about 250 words. So this is the kind of thing that you would be needing to pitch in about 100 words or maybe 150 words. And some of those words are going to be about you, and some of them are going to be about the story. And the ones that are about the story are probably, you know, half of this final piece. So this is, like I said, a short business profile, and they can also be done much, much longer, but what unites both of them is that they've taken the why, which, like I said, in this case is the trend, and they've then told a story about how the business is successful. Pretty much all business profiles, the story that you're telling, the story that you're telling is that there was a need, and this enterprising person started this business to fill it. Pretty much every business profile, that's the story. That's the structure of your article, just cut and paste. Here's the need, here's the person, here's how they filled the need. Beginning, middle, end, okay? So how does that translate to person profiles, which is the other part of this kind of triad of interview profile, business profile? So this is a very, very short business person profile. I was trying to find a longer one, but that issue that we're looking at has every other type of article, but it doesn't have really robust individual profiles, unfortunately. So what I will say is that usually a profile of a person is going to be more in line with what I was talking about that business profile. They're going to be talking about how there was something, perhaps there was injustice, or perhaps there was, you know, that individual person had injustice, or there was community injustice, but there was some sort of problem. And then this person came along, or these people, in this case there's two, came along, and they devised a solution and now they're kind of the hero. So that's the difference between the person and the business profile. So like I said, in the business profile, the hero is the business itself. Whereas in the person profile, the person has solved a need, the person has done something, and they themselves are the hero of that story. So in this case, it's a really good example of these three parts of this story, like I was telling you. So it says that the founders started an app that finds quirky trips. And you're like, what is quirky trips? But basically, they were looking for things for people who, you know, didn't want to do a package trip, but they didn't want to book the flight, the stay, and the activities all separately. So it's like if you're typically an independent traveler and you don't want to do things as a package, but you don't want to do all the research, what do? That was the problem. And then they put it together in just 9 months, and they launched it last year. So that's the middle part. That's that they saw this idea, they knew there was a problem, and they sat down and they just banged it out. And so in this case, the person profile and the business profile are kind of related, right? And this goes back to what I said about how they're often kind of two sides of the same coin. You can do a business profile about a restaurant, and you can do a person profile about the chef of that restaurant. And this is really helpful because you can take that same experience, that same visit, that same place that you want to cover and do it as both. You can do it as a person profile for one magazine and a business profile for another. And it becomes a different article, and so you can sell it twice. So that's one of the really great things about this triad of interview, person profile, business profile, because then you can also go sell that interview somewhere else. So just one awesome thing can become these three different types of articles that can go to three different publications. And then you can even do those same articles slightly different for different audiences, whether it's a magazine that's published in the UK versus here, or, you know, a magazine that's for families versus a magazine that's for seniors or for couples. So this is how you start to slice things, is you begin with the format, and then you say, okay, now I've got this topic, I fit it in this format, how can I then translate that topic to a different format for a different magazine, and then to a different audience, even in the same format? So let's move on to our next set of article types. And this is the roundup. So I'm going to zoom back out to normal zoom here. So in the roundup, like I said, I'm going to show you a couple of different flavors of roundup. But I wanted to start with the really, really, really vanilla 10 things worth getting on a plane for. I don't have all of them here because it was a couple pages long, all the different 10 things. But this is a roundup, which you're going to notice. There's dates, okay, right? There's May to June, August to September, June here. So this is 10 things worth getting on a plane for this summer, right? So it's got go now versus book now, and it's got all these other things. So like they've got culture and outdoors. They've got all these different slices that they've put on here. And the only unifying factor, the only commonality is here, is that they're 10 things worth traveling to. So it's something that only happens in a limited time, and you should get your butt off your couch and on a plane and go see it. So that's really the only unifying factor here. So this is really like a top 10 things, the best things to do this summer or to book now to do in the fall, but they don't call it that. It's very diffuse. And this is the type of roundup that is really common but hard to pitch. And so I want to point out that you'll see here on the bottom of the page that this is by 1, 2, 3 different people, okay? And I recognize Florence, I think, works for the magazine. So this might be done entirely in-house. And there's a reason for that, because these roundups that have a lot of moving parts that are only slightly related, there's a lot of editorial decisions that need to be made about that. So those tend to be done in-house. So another similar roundup to this that a lot of people see and say, oh, I could totally write that, is like 50 best weekend getaways from New York City for the summer. There is never going to be a time when New York Magazine or whoever is doing that is going to have one writer write that whole thing. They're going to have different writers who are experts in different areas write the tiny pieces of that article that they are an expert in, and they are going to decide all of the things that are included, and they are going to put that together. Somebody wanted me to review a pitch for that the other day, and I was just like, you can't pitch this. Like, this just isn't a section that you have control over what goes in there, if they even would do the same section again. If they've done the 50 best weekend trips from New York City, they're not going to do that again for like 15 or 20 years. They're just going to keep referring people back to that article that they wrote previously. So what are the roundups that you can pitch? Baskets of kittens, love them, love baskets of kittens. And I saw this one and I just died because it's just such a basket and so kittens. And what I mean by that is that it's about Guns N' Roses and their European tour. And so what they've done is they've taken places that were important stops on the Guns N' Roses tour before, and they have told you about what happened there previously and when you can see them in that place again this year. Like, such a weird, weird topic, but such a perfect example of a basket of kittens, right? So this is like united by Guns N' Roses performances that happened before, and they're performing there again. So that makes it a short list. But they use it to talk to you about these different destinations and encourage you to fly there, which is the purpose of the airline magazine. So this is the kind of short, especially, but you could also do this longer, roundup that is very easy to pitch, because editors are not likely to think of these kind of things. So if you don't already start looking at every interesting thing that you visit in terms of what are some other things that are similar to this that I can put together in a basket of kittens, I encourage you to, because these things are just gold. They're really great and editors love them, and this is so, so unique. And you need to start training yourself to look at every individual thing you see and say, what else goes with this? What's the bigger trend? Like, why else do people care? Now, the next variation of roundups, like I mentioned, is the destination guide. So if you have your magazine and you want to flip to it, this is on multiple pages, like I said, and this is number 12. So let's zoom in and have a better look at this. So this is really a pure roundup-oriented destination guide. There is a tiny intro. I would say this is maybe 50 words, but it just goes all into different, very, very short, like 20-word items all around the city that it talks about. And so this is the kind of destination guide that a magazine like Easy to Traveler loves, because they can make it really, really visual. This is not the kind of destination guide that you as a writer are envisioning when you pitch that you want to write about the thing. But it's important to realize that when magazines publish destination guides that just talk about, like I said, relatively unrelated places to stay, restaurants, so on and so forth, they need to make them very visual to capture the reader's attention, because there isn't a narrative thread or like a basket of kitten style thread, like a commonality that unites all of them besides just the city. So they need to keep calling out interesting things visually to make sure that they drag in people who might just kind of roll over this and say, Granada, I don't really know if I'm interested in Granada. They use these photos, they use all the different call outs to make people interested in the article and keep reading the magazine, and if they're not specifically interested in Granada. So, like I said, the next two types of articles are different sides of the same coin in terms of being a bit more atmospheric. I've heard a lot of people say they want to write these more literary stories, and I'm not sure that's quite the word I would describe so much as descriptive or atmospheric. So a narrative feature, like this, immediately jumps out. People thought I was from a different planet. It's first person. It is her story. But if you look through this feature, I believe it's the second feature after the one that's 50 ways to do something in England, or 50 reasons why England is hot right now. This feature is very photo heavy, very design heavy, and that is really common. Features go for 10 or 20 pages now because there's so many photos included. And so this is important to keep in mind, because that's what the editor is thinking when they see your pitch. They're not just thinking of, is it a good story? They're thinking, how does it look on the page? And I'm going to flip over so that we can see more about how this looks on the page. So we're going to go from the manual, and we're going to go forward to the features. Now we're in features. Now we're in this 50-somethings about England. Here we go. Okay, so this is the feature that we were looking at in the slides. So as you'll see, like I said, the text is, if anything, maybe a quarter of a two-page spread. I think it's over now. Oh no, it keeps going. There's some ads in the middle. So like, this is the most text that I've seen on a page in this feature so far. Okay, this one has a little bit more. But it's so about the visuals. So when you are pitching a feature story to an editor, you might think this is a great story or this is a destination, and they're thinking, where are the pictures? So a really great tip that I heard the other day for features like this, not just features that are design oriented as this one is, but features that are in a magazine that has visual heavy features, is to include pictures with your pitch, not yours. Don't include your pictures, because if it's a big magazine, they're going to source them from a professional. So you should include professional pictures to help the editor imagine what it's going to look like. And the reason I say not yours is that editors have a style for their visuals. They have art directors that curate this. So even if you already went to the destination, already shot photos, and they would want to shoot, have you do photos there, they're probably going to send you back to take more. It's very unlikely, especially for a bigger publication like this, that they would just use out-of-the-box photos. They would definitely have somebody, see, here's his photographs, Greg White. And like, I've worked with magazines where they just have photographers all over that they work with that are kind of their stringers in those locations. So even if you have your own photos, if you're pitching a magazine that is of newsstand caliber, so that would be like an airline, a household name airline magazine, or, you know, a newsstand magazine, or a major regional that you could buy in the newsstand but only in a certain area, don't send them your own photos. But what you can do is you can put together like a Pinterest board, or you can pull some things from Instagram to show them this, to show them the really stunning photographic ability of the place that you're pitching, so they can imagine what it looks like on the page. And this tip, by the way, came directly from an editor of a major newsstand publication. So it is 100% okay with major editors, and she said that it's really crucial and helpful for her. So, like I said, the flip side of this is the postcard. And postcards also tend to be very photo-oriented, in part because of what I said, that what the postcard does is it gives you almost a slice of that big, long feature. It gives you an image, even if that image is in words, but it always is going to have an image attached because magazines are so, so visual. So this is a little bit longer than some of those other things we looked at. I would say this is maybe 350 words. But what typically happens with a postcard is that you need to get across a point, and this was actually the headline that first made me realize that this magazine has not great internal headlines. Like, this doesn't tell me anything. The Children's just got even better for foodies. So I looked at this, and I was like, what is this really even about? Like, why is this even in here? So the Children's are a very posh weekend getaway spot for Londoners, and EasyJet magazine is, you know, based around the EasyJet airline, which certainly flies a lot of places, but it really serves a lot of Londoners. I would say that's probably their biggest spenders. So even though this isn't necessarily something that you would hop on a plane for, it's something that's going to be of concern to their readers. Okay, so these are people who might already be going to this destination for the weekend. So why do they care? They care because it just got even better for foodies, but how? And then if you dig in a little further, you'll see that he's taken a village pub, a very big restaurant, or a very big chef who's very well known in the UK, has taken a village pub and essentially poshed it up, as they might say. So this is really actually a business profile, and again, with a trend twist a little bit, but what they've done is that they've put in so many details. They talk about the type of food, they talk about the decor, and they give you this really tantalizing picture. And that is kind of what elevates it from just being a profile into being a moment. So you can also do this with a little bit less of a focus on a single establishment, but it's really hard because you essentially need to show an entire destination in so few words, but still in such great detail, that it's typically best for the postcard to choose one establishment, one meal, one beach you are on, in order to be the focal point of that postcard. There's a short, I think it's relatively short, but there's an essay that Don George wrote that's in his book of essays, The Way of Wanderlust, where he's talking about a visit to a museum. But the only part of the museum visit he talks about is when he's standing in front of one painting and all these crazy local ladies with their hats and their outfits come up and start having this conversation kind of with him and about him and in front of him and around him. And so he talks about the whole city of this place on the coast of France in the French Riviera just through this one conversation in front of one picture at a museum. So that's what I mean about the postcard needing to focus in on one business, so to say, is that you need to be really granular in terms of the moment that you choose to display. So let's get to the two that are more teaching oriented. So essays. So this magazine I also chose not just because it's got that big, huge, juicy front of book, but it's got a huge essay section. So if you go past the features, you're going to see all these viewpoints on it. It's got tons of viewpoints on sections. It's got viewpoints on food, viewpoints on drinks, viewpoints on business. So the one that I pulled out here in particular, I had a different one here, and then I swapped it when I saw this, is that it's just a very illustrative example of what I talked about essays really being about the question, about taking one question and then just asking more questions and more questions and more questions. And so here it says, Alex Pell investigates why Nokia and BlackBerry, who knew that BlackBerry was even around, are bringing back classic cell phones and wonders if it's finally time to let go of the past. So, you know, that makes me kind of curious. Again, like I said, BlackBerry's still around. Like Nokia, Microsoft bought Nokia. Like, why are they bringing back classic cell phones? Why are they even still in existence? And so he keeps asking these questions. He intersperses them with some memories. And at the end, he winds up talking about how at first he mourned the death of the iPod scroll, and he's learned to let go. It's the nature of the beast we call progress. So this is really like life lesson-y stuff here, right? And that's, I think, why a lot of people are scared of personal essays. But I think that if it's something that you want to get into, the best that you can do is read them and practice writing them. And remember, they're all on spec. So if you're just spec means speculation, and speculation is like when you're a gold panner, that you don't actually have the lease to the land that you're speculating on, but if you find something, then you get the profits. So in this case, on spec or speculation means that you have pitched an editor, and the editor says, well, let me see the profits, let me see the essay, and then if I like it, then we'll go with it. So in this case, and like I said, there's a lot of different essay examples in there. It's not super travel oriented, but I chose this one because it's a good example of taking something mundane and tying it into a much larger lesson. So let's go to the service piece. So that front of book that I showed you before, the manual section, is chock full of these because, as I mentioned, EasyJet, this particular publication we're looking at, is really, really very you-oriented because that's their audience. You know, to say it's millennials and me is a little, it's not exactly what I mean so much as that they have decided that their tone is really about what's in it for the reader and bringing the reader in and very oriented to what the reader can do as opposed to an armchair traveler or someone who's more interested in reading about the experiences of others. And so this is one of the very first sections in the manual, number 3, and it's on how to throw an insect dinner party. And I picked this one not because I want us to throw insect dinner parties. In fact, I am now at the retreat house where there's, you know, we're in the country and I'm watching bugs crawl by on the outside of the window while I'm talking to you. So it's not the most appetizing sounding thing, but I chose it because it's a crazy idea, right? Like, I think we often think of, when did somebody want to pitch in the Pitchapalooza? It was something about how to disconnect when traveling, like how to do a digital detox. But how many stories like that are there? Like I said, today, if you want to be getting a service piece in a magazine, you have to not only include quotes, here's some quotes from the Nordic Food Lab, but you have to also show something that the editor can't get in-house. So it's not just that you can get the quotes, but it's that you have this idea and you have some connections or you have some experience that really make you the best person to write this. So with that, that's all the different article types that I wanted to lay out for you guys today. So I got one question here about article topics. Any suggestions on how to decide which of the styles would be best for an idea that you have? My actual advice is to do all of them. And this is part of why I wanted to lay all of these out for you. If you have an article idea and you're not sure which one it would be, try to find a way to fit an idea into every single one of these because that's how you're going to sell a lot more stories. So I think that's a good point to end on, and thank all of you so much. So thanks, you guys, and have a great weekend. Cheers.